We're about to chat about another Georgia family and the abuse of power that we are continuing to witness around the country in child welfare. Join us today on Fostering the Future.
Welcome to the Fostering the Future podcast, a show about all things child welfare, dependency, adoption, and foster care. Here are your hosts, veterans in the world of child welfare, Jack and Kat.
We believe that every human has incredible and equal value regardless of what side of the courtroom we sit on. We hope that everyone feels welcome and accepted here on Fostering the Future.
Make sure you follow us on Facebook or Instagram as Fostering the Future Podcast, or check us out on our website at fosteringthefuturepodcast.org. This is Jack, and I am here with Christy. And today we brought our friend Jen back to tell us about one more Georgia family who has experienced egregious abuse of power by Georgia DFACs. Thank you for coming back, Jen.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Jen, can you tell us a little bit about how you got to know the Timms family and more about their story?
Interesting enough, I would see this person posting on the other families going through this, specifically the Hernandez family, of course, and a lot of posts on Parents Behind the Pinwheels. And it was Carrie. At the time, she was using a business page, so I didn't know if it was man, woman, I knew nothing who this person was, but I noticed they were doing a lot of encouragement and started to make comments about knowing what these families were going through. So I can't remember if I reached out to her or she reached out to me, but we started messaging back and forth. That soon turned into calling each other, FaceTiming each other. When I got the full picture of their story, I couldn't believe what they had been through and that Terry was able to be so encouraging to these other families while going through this. So I asked, like, where's your story? Why have you not posted a Parents Behind the Pinwheels? At that time, they were very hesitant to go public, as most of these families are, you know, even the ones who have gone public, I think there's reservations there for all of them. So we just built a friendship based off of that, just me encouraging her and she encouraging other families. And once You Are the Power got involved, you know, I kind of just really pushed her towards, like, you should at least send your story to them. Let's see, you know, what kind of going public we could do that you guys are comfortable with. We did that and we've just become really good friends. I care about her a lot. Her situation has been going on for 2 years and it's different than some of the other families. So they, Brady and Carrie Timms, happily married, have a little boy in 2021. They have a son. Within the first few weeks, she had some problems with her pregnancy. Okay, so she had some heart palpitations, nothing life-threatening that they ever worried about, just little things here and there during her pregnancy. When little Jameson was born, just in a few weeks, he started having these discolorations show up on his joints. I've never seen pictures of these, so I can't tell you what they look like, just to the parents, like kind of like a bruise, like, what is this? And then it would go away. Well, they took their baby to the pediatrician to talk to them about it. Some of the time they would just be gone. They would just go away. The markings are gone. Okay, it's no big deal. Then they would come back.
They wouldn't lighten up and change. They just disappeared.
Yeah, I think they just completely disappeared. Again, I haven't seen photos of these and they weren't alarming enough for them to call them bruises. It was more like discoloration marks. Okay. They weren't looking at it like, oh, how did this bruise get on our baby? It was more like, what's on our baby? What is this mark on our baby? And I think it was on his joints mostly. They went to Erlanger Hospital, which is in Tennessee. They did blood work there. They really didn't do a very good job at this hospital handling anything. They had Brady and Carrie spend the night to wait on results. They didn't really get very far with anything. I think later they lost Jameson's blood that they drew. So they wanted to like redo the blood draw, like just weird things where they just didn't get any answers. As it continued to happen, they went to their pediatrician again. And I don't know the level of worry that Brady and Carrie felt. I've never asked them that. With each family, I feel like no one has been in panic mode. A swollen leg or markings, I think it's more like, what's going on? None of these parents that I can tell were like panicked about it. It was more like, I wonder what this is. What is happening? So this pediatrician at this particular visit ended up sending Brady and Carrie to CHOA, Children's Health Crib Atlanta, as we're all familiar with at this point, sent the baby there. From there, things, just like with the other families, just spiraled out of control. Now, I have seen pictures of this on Jameson. He had a like skin missing on his little cheek. It almost looks like an eczema mark, but I'm not saying that that's what it was, but that's just how it looked, like a spot that would probably itch somebody, right? They were worried about that. And I think that's what prompted them to the pediatrician that day, was this mark right here. And then saying, you know, he's had these discolorations. Like, what is going on? So while they're looking at the baby, they see under his tongue a red dot. And I've seen photos of this. And you guys, it was just like these other situations. They were immediately starting to talk about somebody force feeding this baby.
Wait, a red mark under the tongue, like a sore, like a discoloration, like was it raised?
In the picture, it's hard to tell. It didn't look raised. And Carrie's the one who noticed it, by the way. While she's there in the office, she's noticing this mark. And so they're worried about this. They look at, I can see this mark under his tongue, too. I don't know if it was raised, Jack. That's hard to tell for me. It was red. It was very red. And on a newborn at this time, he's 6 weeks old. I mean, that is something to say, where did that come from, right? Because not many things, a pacifier, a breast, a bottle, those are the only things going into a baby's mouth.
And they thought it was from force feeding under the tongue?
Yes, as in someone was shoving. I don't even, it's not funny, but in my mind, I try and picture things. And I'm like, how would that even happen with a breast or a bottle? Things these caps say and these things that these people that are on these protective teams come up with, they're just insane remarks. They get prompted to do x-rays. Lo and behold, there's fractures, some rib fractures.
Not along where any of the marks were.
No, absolutely not. One thing that's really important that I feel like I drilled in last time, but I'm just going to say it again. A lot of times you hear fractures and I think people automatically think snapped bones. And as soon as you hear baby fractures, you're like, oh my gosh, that's horrible. A baby's immobile. They can't move themselves. Someone obviously did that. And I do understand that. I understand why people start automatically saying, well, someone did that. One thing I would love for people to see is to see these x-rays. There are a lot of times you cannot at all, a layman person, see anything on these x-rays. It is so difficult to see. So I wish people would understand, sometimes this means chips, little cracks at the tops of the bones. So I've never seen Jameson's, but I've seen, I saw a picture of one of his x-rays. So that's kind of different. But for an example on Emma Hernandez, when you look at her x-rays, you do not see breaks. You see at the tips of tibia, the fibia, and that's what these caps and radiologists are saying are fractures. When you have geneticists looking at this, they're talking about it's because of the decalcification of the bone, the metabolic bone disease. So I do want to make sure people understand, don't think that these doctors put up an x-ray and just see broken bones everywhere. That's not what this is. They came home and were told by a caseworker, maybe an investigator, you might could take a parenting class and get defects off your back. Like they just threw out a, maybe do this and everything will go away. And,
don't
and
do then, that.
Like, right?
Definitely they don't do that.
They get called by defects a couple of days later. And they're told, you need to take Jameson to CHOA immediately and be prepared to be treated like criminals. They were told that by a defects worker.
Are there any other siblings or is Jameson the only kid in the house?
So he has an older brother from a previous relationship.
this older brother, has there ever been any accusations, concerns, questions, anything like that, that the father or anybody involved in the child's life was abusing him?
No, absolutely not. There was nothing. This older brother to Jameson has never had any issues, and no medical issues either. So they're told, bring Jameson now to the hospital. And now remember, think about this, guys. You have an adult. Now, DFAPS is not the police. So everyone needs to keep that in mind. CPS is not police. You have DFAPS calling you up and telling you, take your infant to this hospital now and be prepared to be treated like criminals. Now, I don't know if that person was giving a fair warning, like literally warning them, or if it was a threat. I don't know. They take him in. From down there, of course, it just spirals out of control. They claim there's fractures. The cap involved in this is Verena Brown. She is not a radiologist. She admitted to the family, I can't read x-rays, but I think this is the spot they're worried about. And it wasn't, it wasn't even anywhere where there are supposed fractures happening within this baby. They're told to leave. Jameson is ripped from Carrie's arms. So if you think this mom or this dad, because you don't know right now, right? You think someone's abusing this baby. How is it hurting him right there in the middle of a hospital to be sitting on his mom's lap while you discuss and talk? Why aren't you saying, hey guys, you may want to get a lawyer, because unfortunately, blah, 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 due to policy, we're going to call these people. And they're going to start making things really difficult, but you deserve an attorney. When you look at pictures of this baby that day that this happened, he was very safe. He was happy. He was healthy in his parents' care. Everything was going good besides these little marks that they didn't know where they came from. They are not trying to keep children safe. They did not look at Carrie and Brady and really believe that this baby was being abused. That is not who they are.
They were escorted off property.
Right.
What has happened since Jameson was removed?
Carrie is a researcher. She immediately started researching, came across parents behind the pinwheels, found where this has happened to other families, started doing research. I wonder what's going on with my son. I know I didn't hurt him. No, my husband didn't hurt him. Let's figure this out. They get permission to go to a state up north. They get permission to go to a state up north where a very well-known, prominent doctor does testing on children for specific conditions. She, after researching, felt like this condition, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, I wonder if me and my son have this. You know, it has to do with hypermobility. She can do all these weird praying hands behind her back, a lot of hypermobility. It happens to be fractures can happen with people with Ehlers-Danlos, discoloration, bruise-like markings, GI issues, just different things that she's like, this could be related. DFAPS needs to approve it. They actually do approve it. And they say, we're going to send a DFAPS caseworker to meet you in this state to be part of this appointment. It is okay. For both. So they go. DFAPS wants to be in the room. The family member who had him in their care at the time is also in the room. They get a diagnosis. You have Ehlers-Danlos. Looking at your son, the people need to understand Ehlers-Danlos has 13 different subtypes. There was clinical findings. So for hypermobility, you do need, it's more clinical. The problem with children, they're already very flexible. A baby doesn't have kneecaps yet until they're what, 2 years old. So it's actually difficult for doctors, and a lot of doctors do not want to diagnose. They don't want to say this baby has Ehlers-Danlos, but they can say based off of these things, it's pointing towards Ehlers-Danlos. And that's most doctors. I don't think any right now will diagnose under the age of 4 or 5. So this very prominent, well-known doctor who is an endocrinologist, they also did a genetics report on Jameson. It showed up that Jameson has a connective tissue disorder. Ehlers-Danlos is a connective tissue disorder. This shows up in your collagen genes. There's different collagen genes. I mean, if it quacks like a duck, you know, flaps like a duck, it's probably a duck. So you're looking at this gene mutation comes back with a collagen issue. Ehlers-Danlos, mom just gets diagnosed with it. DFAPS is in the room during this. So in Carrie's mind, we're going back to court, which was in August of 2022. The judge is going to see this, that everything my baby has had, you can have with this condition. This is going to be great. They have this doctor ready to zoom in on that court hearing because he's going to give his findings. He's going to give testimony for this family. When they get there, this judge says, no, I don't want to hear any testimony. No, DFAC says just because you have this syndrome doesn't mean you didn't abuse your baby. They don't listen to testimony. They don't care that this has been diagnosed. Instead, the judge says, look, I want to close your case today. And there's dispute on whether she was doing them a favor or she wasn't. But she says, pick a family member, sign your baby over, and I'll close the DFAC's case. So you need guardianship to a family member, not full adoption, but guardianship. And I will close this case.
Wait. The judge said that?
Yes.
The judge said that in court. Is this on like the court reporting? Like this is like official?
Unless they like blocked it out or didn't transcribe that day. This is a tough one because I think getting DFACs removed was a huge blessing because they are the biggest hurdle with every other family that we're dealing with. However, this judge also completely disregarded what she should have listened to hear what the findings were, what this doctor said.
I'm very confused. She came back with the diagnosis, which they let her go get, which DFACs workers were present for. And at that same hearing, not only was there no credence put to this, no motions to return the kids, but the judge says, sign your rights over.
They tried to get Carrie and Brady in trouble for leaving the state with James. Carrie had text messages, like reading it, showing it to her attorney. Like we had proof to take him. DFACs was in the room. So if we took him without permission, what were they doing there? Like, obviously we had proof. Here's the text messages. But of course, like I've seen in family court, they don't want to hear that. Whenever they say something they want to say and you're like, wait, but that's not true. The judge can just cherry pick what they want to hear and what they don't want to hear.
So did Carrie walk into that hearing thinking that this might be the day my kid comes home?
Yeah, 100%. They were sure of it. You now have an answer, right? You have an answer for some of the pregnancy issues you had. You have an answer for what's going on with your baby because people need to remember when you know you didn't hurt your baby, you know something's wrong with them. Now let me have my kid back so I can start helping them, get them what they need for medical care. So yeah, they walked in that day thinking that. Thankfully, family does have Jameson. They get to see Jameson almost anytime they want. They do not have court order visits. They just have to be supervised under all children under 18 years old. So some would say, well, that's good because DFACs isn't in the way. And I would agree with that. However, you're talking about your baby being right at arm's length, right there where you can have him and then you can't. Okay, so Brady and Carrie were both charged with the exact same charges Matt and Taki were. Same as Corey Sullivan. It's the same charges. Carrie's name is like not even written in some of these reports, but both of them are charged with the same thing. They were waiting 2 years, no indictment. Within weeks of going public with parents behind the pinwheels, you are the power, Carrie and Brady got indicted after 2 years. That is not coincidence.
No, it's not.
It'll be very mutual for both sides. Like once criminal charges are dismissed, as I believe they will be, then this family who has them says, let's go to court. Here's your kids back. It's not going to be a fight. It's not going to be it's going to be here they are. That's the great part of this. Hopefully their case just gets dismissed. That would be beautiful because there's no evidence against this family, just like with the other families. How are you charging a husband and a wife with the exact same charges, with the exact, so they like collaborate together that they're going to abuse their baby at the same time in the same way. You're not even talking about dad did it, mom is an accessory. You're talking about same thing. Like you did it at the same time. You're both psychotic and you both did this. It's just weird.
What it basically shows is that they don't know what happened.
They don't know.
If you can't charge somebody with a crime that you don't at least have evidence that a crime happened.
Think about it. It's just like the Solomons. It's just like the Hernandez. It's just like the Alexanders. I sat in that courtroom. They don't know a date. They put like 6 to 8 week period somewhere between here and here. This baby got hurt, but they really don't know. And even when these fractures tie to being in utero or during NICU, they don't even count those, right? They don't care about that they weren't even in the parent's custody. So they don't know who did it. They don't know when they did it. And they don't know how they did it. Carrie and Brady are looking at 80 years in prison, apiece, each of them.
So they've been charged. They've been indicted.
Yes.
What is the next steps?
Waiting to find out when they're going to court. The burden of proof is supposed to be on the state. It's not on the parents. However, you as the defendant, you want to get witnesses lined up. This is our biggest struggle with all of these families because these quack doctors that the state doesn't like are great doctors. They're geneticists or endocrinologists. They know these syndromes. They know these osteogenesis imperfecta. They know Ehlers-Danlos. They know osteopetrosis. They understand these things and they stand by the truth, not families. They stand by the truth. And you need expert witnesses to come and testify in your court. Well, most of these do not live in Georgia, right? So in order to get someone to fly from up north or out west or wherever they are from down in Florida, you have to have a date. You have to set a time. I was in a meeting the other day with another family with medical stuff and the legal team. We were talking about expert witnesses. For one expert witness who's really well known, it's $15,000 just to send them the x-rays and have them look it over. That's not even like them coming and testifying. Now, a lot of these also will do it pro bono. You have some great ones, but they're the ones that the courts they don't want to hear them. So the good ones who are willing to come pro bono, all you need to do is pay my way, which I agree with and I completely understand. It's not free to travel. These families are happy to pay it. The courts already disregard them before they even come. And people might say, well, why? Because their whole name and their career can get ruined. Because that's what these courts and these CPS people and these judges do. They just say, oh, he's a quack. He's a hired gun. He's crazy. And then boom, you start saying that. And these other judges start saying that. And these other courts start saying that. It's ridiculous. Did Tasha have? She's got 7 doctors testifying that her kids have this condition, and one judge and one cap can say, we don't really care. Doesn't matter to us.
And not just 7, but like best of the best, like Harvard, Yale, like the founding father of child abuse pediatricians. Like the crazy thing here in this case is that the only evidence, and this is true in almost all of these cases, but their only evidence that child abuse happened were these medical symptoms that are all explained now that Jameson has a diagnosis of HEDS. So the only evidence that was there is negated now. Obviously, the criminal charges need to be dropped because
this is nothing crazy. There. You have to stop. No crime has been done. You don't have a date. You don't know how it was done. I mean, what do they want to focus on? The little mark on his little bitty face that the parents were worried about?
Often in these cases, despite mounting evidence of a misdiagnosis, we see DFACs and the child abuse pediatricians kind of double down and in order to protect themselves. And sometimes they do things that are illegal or unethical. It sounds like we already talked about one thing was the judge. It seems unethical to me when the judge basically coerced the family to sign guardianship over to a family member. Is there anything else that you know of that has been done in this case that was unethical?
I don't know what grounds she had. If she was trying to save this family from going through heck with DFAT, for all I know, that's what she was doing. She may have been doing them a favor. I do not know. All I know is that's what happened that day.
What she should have done was reunify the family.
Well, she should have listened to testimony and listened to look at the diagnosis.
Like if she was trying to protect them from DFATs and she was trying to protect them from that, she would have said, oh, we have a diagnosis explaining the injuries. Let's send these kids home and close the case. How has this removal affected Jameson? So it happened, obviously, when he was an infant, and he has now spent like the first 2 years of his life living with a relative, which obviously is better than being in foster care, but not being able to grow up with your parents is definitely not ideal. In what ways he's been affected?
It's not going to affect him right now the way that it might some of the kids, older kids, because it's all he knows. He's never got to live in his house that he knows of, but he knows his mom and dad have a house. So for him, it's normal. And that's the sad part. It shouldn't be normal to him that his mom and dad have a different house than him. I'm not an expert by any means, just my own self-pace. And this is going to affect Jameson, even though he is young. And people can say all day long, well, he's too young to notice. Right now, he's living the only life he knows. But this is going to affect him. The fact that he's with family is the biggest blessing, and it is protecting him 100%. It's protecting him from what these other kids can't be protected from. It's so good, but it's got to be so hurtful for Carrie to watch her son go when the time comes. It's so hard for me to think about.
I think it adds a layer when you know there's a medical situation going on too, you know? I know that you've gotten really close with Carrie through this. What has it been like to watch her go through this? What has been this experience for Carrie?
Wish I got all my tears out already. You know, I don't know her before this catastrophe. She's a happy, kind, encouraging person. She is the first person in all of this who's going to encourage another mom, another dad, and tell them how to look on the bright side or to give them good words of encouragement. She's so nice and she's so kind and she's happy. She's really happy. She's a very happy person. We had a great time at dinner last night. Her husband is super awesome. They're just super good people. I wish I knew them before this, and I hope we can all stay friends for a really long time when things are reunified and things are better. It's just sad. They're such genuine people. You just love being around them, and they just deserve better.
What can listeners on this podcast do to help support the Timms family?
You can go to their social media pages. All of these parents, you know, have their stuff public, not because they enjoy that, because they're trying to get word out. So a lot of these parents will friend anyone on there because people send encouragement. People want to know how they can help. Youarethepower.net/Georgia has who you can email, who you can call, the things you can say, the things that will help. Respectfully, we're trying to get in touch with Governor Kemp. By this time, he sure as heck knows that we want a meeting with him. Obviously, he's ignoring that. Maybe he'll change his mind soon. But these families want to meet with him, and they want, because he's over the agency, the Department of Family and Children's Services, he's over that agency, and he needs to know what's going on, and he should keep these people accountable for what they're doing. Jack has it set up on her website. The same thing, what you can do to help these different families. When you go to their page, a lot of times they're selling t-shirts like the one that I'm wearing. They sell t-shirts, yard signs. If you're inclined to do that, or most, I should say, have GoFundMes, give, send, goes. This stuff is expensive. In order to get someone to testify to the truth of your case, you're talking about $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, you know, and what limit exactly would you put on your children? Because that's where these families are at. They have to think about what number can they go to, but they need a home for their kids to come home to.
Right.
I mean, you have to have a home, because defects would friggin' love that. You lose your house. Boy, would they love that.
Yeah, they would.
So you need a job. These parents have jobs. I mean, they're just normal people though. These are not mega rich families. These are normal people just living normal lives, working in normal places, trying to live. So this stuff's expensive. So I know the money part is a huge part. This stuff is expensive. Parents Behind the Pinwheels has so many of these stories. So if this is new to a listener or they want to read more stories,
Make sure you're sharing these podcasts with your friends and family members. If you go on TikTok, you can see some of these podcast episodes live and in action. Share those with your friends on social media. You know, just keep the conversation going, because people being silent is just going to allow this to continue. And so we need to be speaking about it. We need to be raising our voices about it. We need to be raising others' voices about it. Just keep fighting until these stories stop happening.
Yeah, you have to put an end to it. And spreading the awareness is part of that, putting an end to it. Letting them know, we know what you're doing. We know.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you subscribe and follow us on social. We hope that you join us again next time and keep on fostering the future.